When I reflect on the best leaders who've really impacted my life, they all have this thing in common where I felt seen, I felt heard, I felt listened to. How important is it when it comes to being a good leader to really listen to people?
The best leaders are those who are making space for other people. They're not going it alone. They're pausing, they're stopping, they're inquiring. They're looking at the value of diverse experience. And they're not necessarily feeling that they have to tell people all the time of what their experience is. If I can support women to address the system and to become cognizant of the system and recognise who might be in the system who could be in support of them, whether it's coaches, mentors, advocates, customers, clients, friends, whoever it might be, and then build upon that with their own sense of understanding and confidence, then I feel that we're going to help to close that gap. Leadership is a continuum. The impact you have will differ today than it will tomorrow. It's opening yourself up to what is possible and leading to try and better not only yourself, but better the experience of others.
Welcome to the Career Confidence Podcast. It's an absolute honor to have you on today. I am really excited to dive into your book. As I was just saying, it's a book that is very needed right now. I think a lot of people are sort of really struggling how to lead and motivate the team, especially in these sort of trying times that we're sort of living through right now. So before we dive into that, can you give a bit of an introduction for the audience into who you are and your incredible career journey? So Karen, over to you.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for having me join you today. I'm really excited to be with you. My background is I'm an executive coach. I am a certified executive coach with the International Coaching Federation. I received my accreditation following the completion of my Master's of Science in Coaching Psychology. And in fact, I obtained that late in my career. I started off my career in the field of taxation. I'd studied law and economics. I had every intention of practicing family law, but I fell into the field of taxation where I was assisting corporates with seeking further funding to conduct research and development within Australia to the benefit of the Australian economy. After having done that in a small boutique firm, I moved across to Deloitte, and I've spent the last 26 years with Deloitte. 16 of those years, I was a partner in that tax area, focusing on supporting corporates to be very purposeful in the work that they were doing. And then back in 2016, I pivoted into my second career in Deloitte. I left the field of taxation and I moved into the executive development field and rolled out a program where I was and continue to be coaching women leaders across Deloitte Australia. And also I'm a faculty member of Deloitte University in Singapore, Asia Pacific. So I act as a partner faculty member supporting those programs as well. So it's been a lot of fun being in the business and working with corporates and clients. It's also been a lot of fun moving into the second career, which for me has been really impactful in coming back to supporting the individuals and through executive coaching, really supporting them so that they can be their best selves. And most recently, of course, I've authored my first book, which is Be Your Own Leadership Coach, Self-Coaching Strategies to Lead Your Way. And that's been an absolute privilege and a real passion project to allow me to try and assist further beyond those people I'm coaching day to day.
Yeah, you've had quite the career. I mean, 26 years, plus in Deloitte is, yeah, quite the highlight, I would say. And look, because I think a lot of people would listen to that and, you know, some people would go into a big organization like Deloitte and almost get swallowed up in how you've continued to move up the corporate ladder, if you like, and sort of really carved your own career. It's just, it's a real, I think, example of what an intrapreneur, that word that I keep reading about, that's a prime example of that. Like, you've really had a vision and gone for it and really sort of now worked your way up into such an incredible position within Deloitte. When you sort of went into that big corporate, did you, like, have there been any sort of like challenges that you've had to overcome, and especially as a female, because I'm sure that passion for female coaching has come out of maybe your own observation challenges over that sort of 26 year period. So talk to me about the early days of joining a big organization like that, and where did that passion of coaching, especially females, come from?
Well, hasn't the world changed? I mean, 25 years ago, it's so different to where we are today. So my experience has literally been, you know, a lifetime. And so I've been really fortunate in over, as you referenced, in over that time, being able to see a lot of change, experience a lot of change. And the things that we do today are so different to how we did them when I first entered the corporate world. I mean, even from the very use of technology through the way we communicate, the way we team, the way we look at leadership, it really has evolved. And I've been really lucky to be a part of that, to actually feel its effect, to try and understand, well, what works well for me and what have been the things that I've enjoyed, and those things perhaps that have been a lesser experience. And so you can learn from all of those experiences along your journey to try and unpack and tap into, well, how did that make me feel? And what could I do to try and have an impact that's supportive and conducive to allowing people to be their best selves? And I've been very lucky within my career. I've had lots of fabulous people that I've worked with, lots of great role models, very diverse range of people across the business. And as the business has grown tremendously over 25 years, it's a very different business to what it was when I entered. So when I entered, it was very small. Everybody knew each other by name. We knew each other across the business, both up, down, and sideways. Today, it's considerable in terms of the sheer number of people within it. And so there's a different level of understanding, a different level of connection, and a different way of doing business to what it was. But with that comes a journey, and it comes an opportunity to open your eyes to different perspectives, to learning from different people with different backgrounds, different areas of expertise, and also allow that to help you grow and develop. And in some ways, when you're moving through change, you can become a little uncomfortable, but it's learning how to sit in that discomfort so you can observe what's happening and become much more comfortable and grow with the discomfort. And that's where your growth points come, when there's that sense of discomfort. If it was all really easy and comfortable, I'd suggest would become complacent. But over time, if you're actually looking at, well, how am I grappling with this growth? How am I enabling myself by discovering more and perhaps not having the answers, but learning from others and building upon that? Those, I guess, are the key things that have, across my journey of the ups and downs, the good, the bad, the ugly, as any career would have, it's got me to where I've got today. But I must say, in all fairness, it's been a very heavy shifting and leaning to the good, which has been my career experience. And I'm very fortunate and grateful for that.
I love that. But you're so right that the growth comes from the struggle. And, you know, if it was all just easy, I don't even think we'd feel a sense of as much pride and achievement and a sense of like, look at what I've accomplished over those years as well. And I think people try and avoid the struggle, and maybe they play it safe too much. They don't take a few career risks, and then they wonder why they're not making those progressions as you have done. So I think that whole point you just said then about really learning and growing through the struggle is a really, really key takeaway, because again, it's how we frame things, isn't it? And from that sort of conversation there, I sense that you're a glass half full. You're someone that focuses on gratitude and positivity, which is kind of a pattern I see with people on this podcast that have really shaped their careers. But you mentioned about your passion for coaching women. So Why is that a passion of yours, and why in particular have you chosen to make that your sort of real focus and mission?
For a couple of reasons. One is through my career, as you can appreciate, and given the grey hair, it's been a long one. And so early in my career, there were fewer women role models than there are today. And so in my experience, it was looking around the room and recognising there weren't as many people who looked a little bit similar to me that I could actually be leaning towards and seeking their counsel, seeking them as mentors and so forth. So as my career's continued to grow, there's been, you know, many, many more women who are now establishing themselves as leaders. And I really enjoy the opportunity to be in service to them, to help them be of their best selves, to be able to have the impact that they'd like to have, which is hopefully motivating and inspiring and long-lasting in their absence. And given we haven't quite got, well, we're far from closing the gender parity gap, there's still a lot of work to do. And I certainly am not a believer that we need to fix women by any means. I think we need to fix the system that we're in. But if I can support women to address the system and to become cognizant of the system and recognize who might be in the system who could be in support of them, whether it's coaches, mentors, advocates, customers, clients, friends, family member, whoever it might be, and then build upon that with their own sense of understanding and confidence, then I feel that we're going to help to close that gap. Because if we just look at the system from one side and say the system has to help itself, I think we have to have it coming from all sides, that everybody who plays a part in the system, women included, need to be able to look at it and say, well, what part of me can I bring into it that's going to help and support me given the factors and the different networks and nodes that exist that I'm a part of, and how do I navigate that? And I think if we're more able to navigate it with a sense of ease and a sense of support, then more people will have greater opportunity. And that's really why I wanted to focus in on women. Back in the day too, and I'm going back many, many years, tens of years now, because there were lesser women, there was lesser diversity. So in terms of diversity of thought, diversity of opportunities, you know, people taking up opportunities, there were the same women who were given the opportunity. So you heard from the same women, you saw the same faces, heard the same voices. And so my intention was to say, well, how many more voices are there? How many more women are there that we can help in terms of building eminence and opportunity, and helping them also identify how they can connect within the system to allow them to have the career that they'd like to have. Excuse me. So that's been my passion. And outside of Deloitte, I've also taken that up with doing some volunteer work with the not-for-profit organization Dress for Success. So I've really enjoyed assisting women coming back into the workplace when they've been enduring particular challenges in their lives, and seeing how they could actually see an opportunity and take themselves to a different place as a result of having the right support around them. So that's been quite wonderful to be a part of.
Oh, I can imagine. And that we need more women like yourself to be using your voice, your experience, your lessons for good, and to really, I guess, carve out a path of what's actually possible. Because I think sometimes part of the problem is there's a lack of visibility. And I think, you know, sometimes we look for mentors and coaches and we go, okay, what's she achieving? Oh, wow. If she can do it, I can do it. And it's what typically comes from when women like that look like us, that, you know, sort of like you go, and it doesn't have to be massively ahead. It could be two steps ahead. And those people could then give help to those people that want to be where they are. And I just think if we can really start helping each other out, having these conversations, bringing awareness, elevating the voices of those in the room, we are going to make change. But we still have a long way to go. And I think that part of the issue that I see is that women tend to, they don't want to take as many risks. A lot of women that I'm coaching myself through, like job interviews, they're not as confident and they almost play down their achievements. And I think that sort of comes from our programming as young girls of just, you know, be a good girl, just smile and look pretty. And that's how you get recognized and validation. Whereas as soon as you start using your voice and you start speaking up, it is kind of feels a bit new territory to some women. And I know it did for me anyway. But once you start using your voice, you build the confidence and the courage to use your voice, then you're sort of like looking around the room and going, other women are going, oh, she's speaking up, I can speak up too. And you're sort of creating that safe space. So I just want to just say, you know, thank you for doing what you're doing. And, you know, this is why I run this podcast, to elevate female voices and to make sure that, you know, the good work that you're achieving is being heard as well, because it's just so, so important. So important.
I appreciate that very much. Thank you. I also take a slightly different perspective when it comes to coaching of women, because I'm very conscious of trying not to have a gendered conversation when we're talking about how we coach women, because there are our own unconscious biases as well as those that we're coaching or others who are watching on from the sides that could actually start to wrap around these types of things. So I try and just look at the individual and understand, well, what would be in support of you to be of your best self, regardless of gender? And from there, we can then take steps forward to say, okay, well, if for you, it's actually finding your voice, then let's work on that. But I also do coach a lot of women who are very confident. And if we look at the scale of confidence, if we took a scale from 0 to 10, I'd have people who are all through that scale. And that's what's quite lovely about it, because you don't know who's coming into the room. You don't know how they feel about themselves or how they see themselves. And so by looking at the individual, regardless of gender, we're then much better able to find out, well, what are the areas that could be of support of you in terms of the behaviours, the emotions and the cognitions, which will allow you to have the impact that you'd like to have, that positive, long-lasting, enduring impact. And then how do we also take note of the system that you play a part of and that you're a part in? And then how do you start to navigate the system given who you are and who you'd like to be and the impact you'd like to have? So for me, I guess that's the lens that I try and look through which is a little bit different, I guess, to how some people might look at women's coaching programs.
No, I love that. And it is just everyone as an individual. We're all working on our little quirks and trying to get that 1% better every day. And that's such a perfect approach. I absolutely think that's the right approach as well. And yeah, I can see how that would have so much impact of really understanding the individual. But look, I really would love to dig into now your book. And congratulations, by the way, writing a book is, you know, a pretty big achievement. It requires a lot of focus and dedication. But your book, Be Your Own Leadership Coach, what motivated you to write that? And just curious, what was that whole process like of putting your thoughts and your experiences like all onto paper?
It was a wonderful process, actually. I was motivated because I was given a coach. Back in the day, I was put onto some leadership programs towards executive roles. It was the first time I had a coach, and I hadn't really understood the concept of coaching and mentoring. And this was the first time I could try and decipher what was this? What was the difference? And once I began to understand coaching, I fell in love with the process. So that's when my studies began. I did a certificate in coaching practice, but I wanted to go deeper. So I started that Masters of Coaching Psychology I referenced earlier. And I was thinking about it as I started to coach. I was very fortunate to be sitting in a room with individuals one-on-one, or when COVID came, moving to Zoom one-on-one. And it was the opportunity to help that individual. And I felt concerned that it was limiting the access of coaching strategies to those few who really would have the opportunity to be put on a program or logistically make access to a coach, or maybe financially be able to afford a coach within a system that they're in. There were so many people who don't have access to coaches for those very reasons. They just can't afford one, or they can't find one, or maybe they've had a coach and they're in between sessions and they're not quite sure what to do. So I felt if I could write a book which would increase the equity of access to coaching strategies and build out coaching practices, many more people would be able to be their best or better selves. And if we can focus on being our best or better selves, then we're able to really tune into who we are. What are our needs? Where are we headed? What are we trying to achieve? How do we build out our self-awareness so we become more attuned to who we are and the impact that we're having? How do we use our time and our energy and build that board of directors around us that will support us? And then once I've actually established who I am and how I can be my better self, I can think about how I can be my better self when I turn to others and lead others. And so that was the second part of the book. So it was really, born out of an intention to try and have a ripple effect that when people are their best selves, their well-being starts to improve. They're much more engaged. They're much more, they have greater connection with what they're doing, and they feel like they matter considerably more. When they do, their well-being's improved and their positive emotions tend to uplift. So they're much more open to ideas. They're open to sharing and collaborating. Creativity starts to increase. Learning increases. And we're able to solve many more problems because we have an openness of mind. And that ripples out to our teams. And so step by step, the positive well-being impact ripples to the teams around us, our family, our friends, our organizations, then to our communities. And you know what? It actually moves itself towards making this world a better place. And currently, we could do a lot more with everybody trying to lean in to make the world a better place. And I think if we have a cognizance of what could my impact be, then it's really helpful to allow for these rippling effects to happen. So that's really what was the inspiration behind the book. The process was long. I'd initially written thinking it was fabulous until I found myself an author coach. Her name is Kelly Irving, and she was the best thing that could have ever happened to me in terms of my writing. So I engaged with Kelly and her expert author community and met some incredible authors, those who were authors who were, authors in waiting and those who had just published. And so I learned a lot from being a part of that community and being able to understand how to better structure my book, how to think about who I was writing for, so who was my end reader and what were their needs, as opposed to perhaps the ego that I was writing with before and trying to separate between the two. And in time, Kelly was able to help me step forward, and from there it went to looking for a publisher, and I'm very grateful that I teamed up with Major Street Publishing who published it, and just most recently it's also been taken up by Pan Macmillan in India, so it's going to be now published in India. And I'll be heading across there in January for a book tour, my first trip to India with purpose, which is even more exciting.
That is so exciting. And it is also an example of why getting in front of the right people and surrounding yourself with the right people in the environment matters so much when you're trying to achieve something like writing a book, like being around other authors, getting a coach to help you. It's all these things that we don't probably think about, but it's so important. I want to go back to self-awareness. This is something that I honestly believe is the foundation that everything else sits upon, and something that I am constantly working on myself. And I think I'm pretty aware now of my strengths, my weaknesses, where I want to improve upon, the little characteristic traits that I sort of come out sometimes. And I know that's, oh, I've learned that from that, and I've learned that from that. I'm constantly trying to get better, and it's an ongoing process. I'm always learning about myself every single day. But I'd love to know why, in your opinion, building up that self-awareness, not just for our careers or to lead teams, but just in life in general, why is it so important to work on ourselves and especially our self-awareness?
Well, I mean, we all want to build relationships with people, and whether their work or social relationships, our ability to connect with people depends on the impact that we have, and our ability to also understand the needs of the people that we're connecting with. So if I'm unable to build my self-awareness, then I might not understand how I'm impacting others, whether it's positively or not. I might not see the consequences or the unintended consequences of my behaviours, my emotions or cognitions. I might not recognize that I'm actually losing my cool when I'm talking to people, or being very forthright, or arrogant in the way that I'm coming across, and not giving any space for others to feel that we can build that sense of relatedness because I'm pushing people away. So by having a greater sense of self-awareness, I can start to understand what is the impact that I'm hopeful of, and what is the impact that I'm actually having, and how do I look at the gap between the two. And each day start to think about, what's my intention? How do I become more aware of what I want to bring, which parts of me I want to bring as the day continues? How do I become aware of how I respond to different things in my environment? So what are the things that might trigger me? What are the boundaries I need to put in place to allow me to make better choices? How do I start to notice more of myself to see how I'm actually having an impact on others, and how I'm trying to include people, or maybe how I'm getting too excitable and talking over people and not allowing space for other people to connect or to share their points of view. So it's about me understanding how and why I matter, but then also focusing on how and why other people matter. And when we all feel like we matter, we'll actually feel much more significant and of worth. We'll add value, and we're of value, and we actually can find our place in terms of our sense of belonging. But if we don't start to tap in to be able to notice and affirm and be cognizant of why we matter and why others matter, there's a mismatch. And so I can spend a lot of time trying to make sure I feel good, but I haven't actually turned my attention to the people around me. So the dynamics at play can become quite dysfunctional and uncomfortable. We're a social construct. We're social beings. And so the more that we can actually work out how do we weave ourselves and look at the threads between us, the better our sense of relatedness, the better our sense of self-belief and self-assurance, and our ability to build our confidence in terms of the relationships that we build. And that leads to a much more harmonious life. It means our emotions are more in check. We have a greater sense of well-being when we have a sense of relatedness as well. And that's why I think it's really important to build self-awareness. And it won't just come from us. It also comes from also asking others to help us build it. So seeking feedback for those blind spots that we can't otherwise see is really important to building self-awareness. So identifying who might be the trusted people around me that I can ask for insights or feedback to help me see what I can't see behind me or in front of me or around me, or hear things that maybe I'm not hearing. Maybe it's my tone I'm not hearing. Maybe it's the pace at which I'm speaking. There might be other elements that they can bring to my attention. All of that is great for building open that perspective and having that reflective frame that I can see more of myself to notice the impact that I'm having.
Thank you so much for listening to today's podcast. I wanted to quickly pop in and talk to you about our amazing supporter, CH Talent Solutions. We are an IT and digital recruitment company based in Australia. If you are someone right now looking for a new opportunity or considering a career pivot, please reach out to one of our consultants. Or if you are somebody looking to build your team or build your company or scale, again, please reach out to us if you are looking to find the best tech talent fast. I look forward to connecting with you. Now back to today's episode. Enjoy. So powerful. I think what one thing for me, and I'd love your thoughts on this as well, Karen, when you sort of, I guess, gone on this journey yourself, which I imagine you have, is I started keeping a journal a number of years back, and you mentioned the word reflection there. And when I really started on my own, I guess, personal development journey, I really wanted to develop myself and understand myself at a deeper level and why I did certain things and why I behaved in certain ways and why certain things triggered me. I started journaling and just sort of observing myself as much as possible throughout the day and waking up in the mornings. And it's a practice I have done for the last 4 years now, is meditate in the morning. And these can range from like 10 minutes to 20 minutes, depending on obviously the day that I've got. But I don't miss a day of my meditation because it just pulls me into the present. When I find that I fall unconscious, that's when I notice these old patterns and behaviors come up more. And then I go, oh, Georgina, like, what happened there? You know, and then but it's good just to journal it out and not beat myself up and go like, how would the best version of me turn up tomorrow? And that constant practice has definitely helped me build up an awareness to certain things that I want to change about myself and I don't like about myself, and things that I've learned probably from my upbringing and things. So any practices for people listening to this right now that really want to build up a bit more self-awareness, identify their triggers, and just really start to understand themselves at a deeper level and perhaps why they do behave in certain ways?
Yeah, absolutely. And I love hearing what you do. It's when we become so much more intentional and conscious of ourselves and that we're able to notice so much more. Mm-hmm. So making space is really important for that. And you doing that in the morning, 10 to 20 minutes of meditation, is very similar to what I suggest to people. Is I suggest start the day with an intention. Take 15 minutes to set your intention. What do you intend, or what do you hope for during the day in terms of how you'd like to show up and the impact you'd like to have, and which parts of you do you need to bring there? What behaviors would accommodate that? What are the emotions that would also situate around that to support it? And then at the end of the day, take 15 minutes when you're closing off your day, whether it's closing for work or closing in the evening. What was my impact? Did it match my intention? And as you said, which of the better parts of me I could bring the next day? It's very similar. So how could I close it down? So I like to encourage people to use the art and skill of self-coaching. And that requires us to actually make some time. So you could do it day by day. Or for some, it's actually taking it once a week to put aside an hour of our time, which equates to only 1% of our waking hours. So if you can invest 1% of your waking hours in yourself, it's a very small percentage to give away for the other things that take up our lives. 1% of time, whether it's during the working day, on the weekend, in the evening, and stopping and thinking about what are the things that are helping me? What are the things that are hindering me? What's the impact that I'd like to have? And so what's working well? And how could I make it even better if I did A, B, and C, those types of things? And what's the support that I need around me? So who do I need to ask of support? What are the tools that I might need to allow me to be my better or best self? But if we stop and assess during those moments that we pause, and then we start as a third party would to take note of what can I give myself in terms of that feedback? What can I start to understand by speaking to myself in the third person to understand you? What have you done and what has made sense in the contribution you've made or the impact that you've had? And then start to experiment and set some actions. So change doesn't happen just because we hope for change. We actually have to start thinking about it and planning for it. So if I can create some small experiments to build out some new practices and habits, I like to refer to people to build out their virtual backpack, which I ask them to carry around each day, of self-coaching strategies. So how can you start to fill more strategies into your backpack so you can feel much more resourceful and comforted each day as you step into the world, and pull out what you need as the day continues so you can really feel that you're stronger and confident and empowered to face into the things and notice more of what you need that you're carrying in that backpack. That's what I think is going to help you when you can stop and pause, start to reflect and assess, self-assess, so undertake that self-awareness, seek feedback if need be, set yourself some actions or experiments, and then at the back end of that, also reassess, how has that gone and what might I need to dial up or dial down to do so? But if we don't make time, we're going to just continue to perpetuate what's been happening and still be wondering, well, why am I feeling this way? And why can't I get on top of this? And why don't people want to work with me? Or why aren't I having the promotions or the impact that I'd like to have? If we're not attuned to who we are and the impact we're having, I could assure you a lot of people will be seeing it, but they might not be great at giving feedback. So they might be pulling themselves away because it's not particularly enjoyable or pleasant or productive. If I tap into the feedback, I could learn a lot. So it's that sense of vulnerability of allowing myself to learn without feeling defensive and helping myself frame it by taking the positive intention that it's probably going to come to me with, as opposed to thinking people are there to damage me or to upset me or to say something that I won't like. Perhaps I'll feel a little bit, come back to that discomfort, a little bit uncomfortable. But again, that's my growth moment. That's when I can start to wonder, well, why are they experiencing that? And what could I do to better understand it?
I love the idea of that rucksack, because people talk about tools in the toolkit, but a rucksack's something you have with you all day. And in those, it's when we need it in those moments of challenge, and, you know, you're being on the spot and someone's just done something and you just want to fly off the handle or snap and you go, hang on a minute, I've got my rucksack with me. I'm just going to pull out a couple of things and take a few deep breaths. And talking about those tools and those strategies that you can use in those moments to really, again, always come back to who you want to be. Hang on a second, I set the intention today. If I react in this moment, that's not who I said I was going to be. It's just that constant like reminder that we get to choose. We still get, it's a choice. And I don't know about you, Karen, but when I'm in those moments and I feel triggered, I just, the best thing I do is just power of the pause, just take a breath and think, right, how do I want to react here? Maybe I just need to say, I want to come back to this later and move on. But yeah, it's so important, because we never feel good about ourselves when we have reacted in the moment. And I think that's obviously what we just end up then judging ourselves and criticizing ourselves. And one thing that you touched upon then, we talk about change, is that, you know, a lot of people say, oh, they want to change and they want to be better. But like you said, without the self-reflection and the self-awareness, you're constantly going to keep on making the same mistakes and decisions and choices every single day. And I don't know if you follow any of Dr. Joe Dispenza's work, but he says something that's so profound. He says, your personality is your personal reality. So people try and change as the same person. But that's not how we change. We have to identify first the things that we want to change about ourselves. And that all comes from what you talk so beautifully about, self-awareness and reflection, understanding yourself. So it's such powerful stuff. And yeah, I want people listening to this to really take this in, because it's so important. But
well, it makes your life a lot lighter as well.
It does.
Because it takes away a lot of the grey, and you can actually get more attuned with who you are and what you can bring and what your capabilities are, both, you know, whether it's technical, emotional, the range of capabilities that we have. So if you know what you can draw on, if you know what's helped you in the past, if you know what your strengths are, if you know what energizes you, you've got all of these things in that backpack that you can draw on. And you're right, carrying it around each day. The reason I chose a backpack and not a toolkit is a toolkit's really heavy and you have to put it somewhere. Whereas a backpack, you can put it on each day, that virtual backpack, walk out the house, your hands are free, ready for the new adventure ahead. And so it's much more, you're much more able to then be very purposeful in how you're using it, as opposed to, I had that toolkit somewhere and now I can't find it, or I've lost my tools, have fallen out and I can't, you know. So I actually thought it was, and I like rucksack. It's obviously your English background just coming through the rucksack and the backpack. I can hear the language there.
Yeah, or you could grab your toolkit and smash them around the head with it, you know, whereas a rucksack, you can't do as much damage. So I like that. But look, so let's say then someone they're really working on themselves, they've built that self-awareness. Then let's sort of talk about the next step, which is then, okay, we want to achieve something. We set a goal and we feel really motivated and, you know, new year, new me, all of those sorts of things come out, right? Why is it so hard, do you think, to keep just achieve goals? Like so many people, I'm not quite sure what the stat is, but I want to know. I'm going to go find this out afterwards, but there's a huge percentage of people that never achieve their goals and what they set out to do and accomplish with their lives. What's your thoughts on goal setting, motivation, and why do people struggle when it comes to keeping that momentum going and really setting those goals?
It's such a good question at this time of year, because as we're closing out the year, people start thinking, oh, my New Year's resolution, mm-hmm. I'm going to set all of these goals. And we know by February, people have dropped. So they haven't achieved them and they're kind of like, yeah. Oh, now what do I do? Mm-hmm. And a lot of it is because of the lack of purpose around the goals. I mean, it's like the nice shiny toys, you know, it sounds great. I'm going to go out and exercise. I'm going to do it every day, but we start too hard. So if we actually want to think about what's the purpose behind what I'm trying to do as opposed to what do I want to do? So often when people set goals, they've simply said, this is what I want to do and this is the outcome I hope to have, but they don't know why. They're not connected with it. They haven't created any meaning against those goals. And in the absence of meaning, it's really hard to build the habits that you need or the practices that you need to start to move forward towards connecting with that goal. So I'd suggest if more people pause before they set a range of goals, and just set them in a way that they understand the why, the value behind it. What are the values and how do they connect with my own personal values to allow me to make sense of these goals? Why do I feel that these goals are important to me and why do they matter to me? And how do I ensure that I've made goals that are purposefully constructed and made in such a way that they're realistic and they're very specific and I can go and move forward to them towards their completion in an incremental way? If I set too big a goal, I'm almost knocking it, you know, out the park. I'm unable to achieve it. If I said it, then it just sounds so fabulous and so big and huge. And imagine if I did that. Well, that might be fine if it's over 12 months or 2 years, but I'm unlikely to achieve that in the short term. So what do I need to achieve in the short term? And in my book, I like to talk about goal hierarchies where we set a longer term goal, but then start thinking about the short term goals that you need to fulfill in order to have the sum of those equal the long term goal. And if you don't understand what those short-term goals are, you're unlikely to fulfill that long-term goal. So you can actually break it down somewhat to give yourself some steps to move forward and make it so that it's measurable, something that you can actually sense to understand, oh, I have achieved that because of this. This is what describes why it's been completed. Make sure it's achievable. Make sure it's time-based. Make sure it's specific. And then you're going to have a greater likelihood of feeling connected with it. And typically also with motivation, if we've set the goal and they're intrinsic to us as opposed to externally generated, we're more likely to feel connected with it. So if I'm at work and I'm told by my boss I have to hit a particular target as my goal and they're saying this is what you need to focus on and I don't feel a sense of connection with it, it's something I feel I must do. It's very distant from me. And so there's not a level of connection with it. So maybe I want to try and work on my mindset to see how I can shift it from something that I must do to perhaps something that I should do. Maybe if I should try and move towards the goal because it'll create many more opportunities for my team and we'll all have growth and we'll all have more interesting work to do. And maybe in fact, instead of saying I should do it, I could try and move it to something I'd like to do because I'd like to have my team feeling like they're also purposeful and engaged and enjoying themselves and of their best. So it's a real mindset shift. It takes some effort. But if you shift your mindset and work on reframing those goals, you'll probably have a greater likelihood of achieving them and moving towards something that maybe in time you love doing it. Who knows?
It's so important, isn't it? And I think what you said there is so powerful about identifying your purpose and your why. You know, when you, let's sort of take, I don't know, weight loss as an example as well, because so many people in the new year have got a goal always to lose weight and then they want the instant overnight fix. They want the 90-day shred. They want the cleanse. And the thing is, with anything in life, success, career, fitness, relationships, nothing's a quick fix. Everything takes time. Everything is a process. Like, it doesn't just happen overnight. And, you know, we live in a world now where it's instant gratification, and the idea of something taking time and it being an ongoing process, that it doesn't just stop when you stand on the scale and you see the weight you want. No, you don't then just go back to eating pizza and ice cream and not moving. You need to constantly eat healthy and move every day. And there's just these processes to it, but that's not what people want to hear. So I think that what I've really noticed that's worked sort of well for myself, and I'd love your thoughts on this as well, Karen, is that identity shift. And actually, when I do my goals, thinking on, well, who would I need to become in order to achieve that? And the identity shift has helped me go, well, I identify as someone who is fit. I identify as somebody who is a driven career professional. I identify as somebody who's healthy. So because my identity is now of this person, it makes it easier then to choose the right habits and disciplines that are going to move me towards that goal, because I identify as that person. And then again, that all ties in beautifully to self-awareness and who we want to become in those 1% games. How important do you think that is as well, if we start to change again the identity of, again, and you mentioned language as well, I should do this. Language is so key in it all as well, isn't it?
Yeah. Language, absolutely, in what we tell ourselves, but we also see through it. So if I'm telling myself I identify as, you know, a fit and skinny woman who's able to run 10 kilometers under an hour, I might also be saying to myself, and who are you fooling? So I need to make sure that it's realistic enough so that I'll have some sense of self-belief and not pretend. Because if I'm identifying with something and I'm not, again, not connected with it, it's really easy for me to hold that thought for a couple of days and then to say, well, it's actually, I'm far from that. So, you know, how am I fooling myself? Nobody else would believe it either. So I would still say, if you're going to take that path, you still need to have the why behind it. I might identify myself as somebody who's fit and healthy. And why is that important to me? It's important to me because I want to live a long and active life. I want to live a life where I'm able to participate with my sons, my two boys, with my husband, with my extended family, my friends. I want to be able to travel. I want to be able to go and hike mountains overseas and enjoy it and not just have to sit on a bus and drive past the mountain and hopefully see what I want to see. So if I can come back to why I see myself as that fit and healthy person, then I think I'm going to be much more connected and driven to hold it, as opposed to step through it and past it and say, well, you know, how realistic is that thinking? So I'd combine the two if I was taking one of you, because I know my tendency, and I can assure you I've had many a time when I've, you know, stood on the scale and told myself I'm going to be this and I'm going to be that. And sometimes I get there and then, yes, those pizzas do pass by and suddenly I'm back where I started. So I haven't been able to build enough of that identity to hold it there, because I've lost my connection with why it's so important. I've let it slip. But when I reignite it and say, well, hold on a sec, that's not a healthy and a good way of being, because it's going to limit my life. It's going to prevent me from being able to sustain long walks, which is something I really love, being out in the fresh air. I love being in green space. If I'm not of a good weight, I'm carrying so much more. The effort is so much more challenging for me to enjoy it. I'm more tired and fatigued. I'm unable to go as far each day. And so that has an impact on the people I'm with. They don't enjoy it as much and I'm holding them back. I'm much more now connected with being motivated to achieve my goal, so I can participate in a way that I feel would be effective and fun and joyful and really allow me to live the life I want to live. So that's where I'd be combining the two.
I love that. That combination is so powerful. And I think also as well, it's who you surround yourself with as well. Like you said at the start, when you're writing a book, you surround yourself with other authors. And, you know, if you've got a goal to progress in your career, again, it's surrounding yourself with people who also want to move up the career ladder. And if you've got a fitness goal, getting around maybe people who are taking fitness seriously as well. And because I guess if you're around people who have always setting goals and they always fail, then ultimately you go, well, you know, we do become sort of the people we hang around with the most. So I guess also when it comes to motivation and drive and identity shift and all those things, get around people and find your community and your tribe that are also trying to, you know, constantly get better every day. But so, so powerful. I think goals and motivations, it's just, yeah, it's definitely a very good topic for this time of year for sure. But look, I love to sort of go back into now sort of the whole leadership piece, because you write so beautifully about why listening is so important. And when I reflect on the best leaders that I've had, the best sort of mentors, coaches, bosses, people who've really impacted my life, they all have this thing in common where I felt seen, I felt heard, I felt listened to. It's not something that I think comes easy to people. I think I did, and I'll put my hand up and say this, I have a habit wanting to fix things. I'll help you there and just almost jumping in and trying to fix people. But what I've learned and what I'm really working on is just my ability to just really listen to understand. It's something I'm really wanting to improve upon, but how important is it when it comes to like being a good leader to really listen to people?
It's very important. And so your comment, the best leaders are the ones that you seem to listen. I actually agree completely with that. The best leaders listen because they make you feel like you matter and they're standing there and they're present with you. Yeah. So I've had experiences, one leader in particular, he was a CEO that I had dealt with over the years, and he could be crazily busy, but when he would speak to you, he would make you feel like you're the only person that he was really wanting to engage with, that you were very important. And even if it was just a short conversation, you always felt that you had his presence. He wasn't distracted. You could see him, just facial expressions, body language, the voice, the way that he'd reflect, reframe, bring in points we'd spoken about in other conversations. He really was with you in that moment. Of course, it might have been short and he'd move on to other needs that he had, but it still felt very important to me to allow me to feel like I was significant in that moment. When we listen as leaders, we actually become better as leaders because we start to build out our perspectives beyond our own. And when you get more senior in an organization, it can become very quiet. Less and less people tend to come to you with ideas and thoughts unless you've sought them. Perhaps it's the psychological safety of doing so, or it's their assumptions that they're making as to how busy you might be and are they impeding on your time. It could be a whole host of reasons. But if we actually make space to try and inquire of others, to ask more questions, to have a curious mindset and to start to understand more about other people's perspectives, we start to build out, push open our cognitive boundaries. And so we gather many more insights and more knowledge and a deeper understanding of what actually is happening. And so we can solve problems in a much better way. We can also collaborate a lot faster because we're making ourselves have space to hear from others so we can explore things together and have a diverse thought process, which can lead to better answers than if it was simply mine. So the best leaders are those who are making space for other people. They're not going it alone, but they're pausing, they're stopping, they're inquiring, they're looking at the value of diverse experience, and they're not necessarily feeling that they have to tell people all the time of what their experience is or why they have the answer. And you do see that with some leaders, they're trying to rescue people. And it can be that they're high in empathy, that they just want to help, so they want to fix it, as you said. And so they come in and they give the answers and rescue them, and they've just spoken at people. But that hasn't really allowed that person to grow, because they're not now learning and connected with it. So if instead of just pushing information at people, you ask the question to yourself, why am I talking? Wait, why am I talking? And make some space in your presence with others to stop and listen and to inquire and to reframe and to let them know that they've been heard through the vocal cues you give and the body language, the eye contact, and allow for time. And if you don't have time, to also own that, to say, look, I can't actually have this conversation right now. I can hear it's really important. I won't be able to listen and be present with you because I'm rushing off to this. Let's find some time later. So I think the more that we can do that, the better we collaborate, the more we learn, the better we're able to grow our own perspectives and be a better leader as a result of doing so. And it's much more fun because you build out your social networks when you listen more, because you start to learn more about other people and they start to learn more about you. So you'll even have more opportunities coming your way because they've heard more from you whilst you've been in conversation. So they know, you know, how they can bring you into a different opportunity or when to call on you or otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've really got me thinking now. This is a really, really good conversation. Look, I'm just sort of thinking about people listening to this right now and they're thinking, right, Karen, this year is my year. I want to be the best leader I can be. What advice would you have for that person? Are there any sort of key things that you think, well, obviously we spoke about self-awareness, listening, but anything else that people can work on to really improve their leadership skills and become the best leader they can possibly be?
I would lean heavily into self-coaching, because the more that you can self-coach and start to build some habits and build some practices and strategies, the greater your capacity to act and respond and be able to be in a position where you can notice if you're listening or otherwise. But if we're not building up our mindfulness and our consciousness and our intentional behaviors, emotions, and cognitions, we're less likely to change. We might have all good intention, but nothing's happening because we're not trying anything differently. We're not getting any data points to be able to self-assess or have others assess us to tell us where do we sit and where could we be. So I really would start with that. In the book, what I've tried to do is give people not only the theory and some stories to introduce each topic, but also some self-coaching exercises, which they can trial and they can try and build those skills, those habits. They can always come back and try them again. So if they've hit an obstacle, that's a great point to stop and say, oh, why isn't this working for me? Why do I still have people telling me in my feedback that I'm not listening when I thought I had dialed it up? But maybe you came in, if you scaled yourself, maybe you only started as a 3 or a 4 as a listener and you've got yourself to a 5 or 6. Maybe there's still some work to be done. So again, it's building out those feedback loops and trying to be on a continuum rather than thinking it's just from A to B. Leadership is a continuum and the impact you have will differ today than it will tomorrow and the next day. So it's opening yourself up to what is possible and leading to try and better not only yourself, but better the experience of others.
Love it. Great answer. And definitely go and get the book because I feel like that is literally the blueprint of how to be a good leadership. And yeah, it does all come down to that self-assessment. Because like you said, you could have all the best, I guess, motivation and drive in the world. But if you're not constantly asking yourself those questions and going within and building that self-awareness, you're never going to be able to change. You're never going to get better. So that's so, so powerful. I could honestly sit and talk to you all day and I know I would learn so much. And look, leadership for me is definitely an ongoing process. And as I look to sort of build up the team from Sea of Solutions, I might be calling you a few times for some tips and tricks and saying, Karen, I'm really struggling. I need that rucksack today. But look, I would love to sort of, final question, that there's a reason why I have called this podcast Career Confidence. And I do believe that obviously, you know, we talk about self-awareness, but also that self-belief, that belief in oneself, that we can do things with our life, achieve things with our life. Like, how have you built your own career confidence and any advice for those wanting to build their self-belief so they can have a career as successful as yours, go on to write a best-selling book and, you know, achieve what you've achieved?
It's something that grows. So confidence doesn't just come because we wish for it. Confidence is quite static until we make it dynamic. So it requires us to more than have the belief. The belief might come from, you know, our history. It might come from some facts that we can draw on. It might come from others telling us that we should have a belief in ourselves. But the belief will come when we have a willingness to act regardless of the fear or the uncertainty of what could happen. And that's courage. So if we embrace courage, that willingness to act and try and better understand where is my mindset at? How open am I in terms of the curious mindset I'm holding, my willingness to learn, and allowing myself to lean into a challenge rather than shirk away from a challenging fear? I need to have some level of courage to enable myself to build my confidence so that I move from simply having a belief to enacting a belief system, which allows me to grow that confidence out. So sure, there's been many a time when I've tried things and felt very uncomfortable and edgy and nervous and worried about things. But part of it is drawing on the experience I've had to date. So what are my strengths so that can energize me, support me? Who are the people around me? So if I don't have the inner confidence, how do I build my interpersonal confidence? By building relationships with others so I can call on them to be of support to me, whether it's as a coach, whether it's as a mentor giving me advice or an advocate helping me find opportunities, or maybe just friends and family who are those people who are just so real with you, they'll tell you exactly how it is. So I think it's actually just stopping and pausing and recognizing what do I need to do to build my confidence, but recognize if I don't have that willingness to act because I have a fear or the uncertainty, I'm just going to be holding that state where I'm at. My confidence will be limited to where I sit currently. I need to open myself up to what's possible and learn from it. Even if things don't go quite as planned, I'll still have some learnings from it, which help me for next time. I'll be even more confident next time because I know what could happen and what did happen. So it's always this openness of mind, I think, which will help you build the courage. And that's the type of approach I've taken, leaning into opportunities and seeing where they take me, recognizing that I had to put in a lot of hard work to learn different technical skills along the way, but also to learn interpersonal skills. And I know I haven't always got it right, but it's trying to build that up over time and still continuing to learn as I go even today.
What an answer. Really inspiring. Karen, thank you so much for coming on today, sharing your wisdom. Where can I send people to find out more about you, grab a copy of your book? We'll actually put that in the show notes below, but where can I send people? Where do you hang out the most?
Thank you. Well, I do hang out on LinkedIn a lot, so please join me there. Let's connect. I like to have conversation and a bit of a chat, so it'd be lovely to hear from your listeners. Also, my book website, karenstaincoaching.com, has lots of my podcasts, my where I've been speaking, some of the articles that I've written, and more about the book. The book's in all bookstores and also available online from Amazon, Booktopia, Barnes & Noble. So please feel free to grab a copy.
No excuse not to. It's everywhere. Very good. Listen, ooh, thank you so much for your time today, Karen. It's been an honor. And I look forward to following your journey. So thank you so much. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. If you've got this far, that honestly means the world to me and lets me know that you've got a lot of value from today's episode. So if I could just ask you to do one thing, pull out your phone and please leave a quick review. It honestly would mean the world to me. It will help this podcast grow and get our message out there to more people. So if you could do that for me, that would be amazing. And please reach out and just let me know what you want to hear more about, what you're interested in. It will just also help me make sure that I'm continuing to speak to topics that are relevant and also find guests that are real true experts in what you want to know more about. So have an amazing day. Thanks so much for doing that. And I can't wait to share the next episode with you.